Hello and welcome to the Scottish Football Show. Coming up, Clermont wraps up a Christmas Cup. Derek Adams is on the naughty list. And is there trouble brewing in paradise? There certainly was for Santa.
It's beginning to look a lot like
Christmas. Let's move on. It's Christmas time. Welcome to the Scottish Football Show. It's going to be a fun one because I've been out the night. Yes. Full of double deckers, caramel wafers and pints. Let's go for it, guys. What a weekend in Scottish football it has been. We've got Laura Brannan from TNT Sports, my sister from another mister.
Hello.
And hello. You all right, pal?
I'm all good. I'm good.
I'm good too. I'm flying. Absolutely fleeing. And someone who is flying over sometime next year, Finlay Marks, the head of creative, the Baldy Maestro, that is Finlay Marks. Hello, pal. You joining us in Germany?
That is very much the plan. I would love to. We've got booked nothing else, but we do have our flights booked at least to Glasgow about 3 days before the Euro starts. So everything else is kind of fair game from there. At least I'm slightly closer in Glasgow than I will be in Melbourne.
So. Given them, I should really start. Like, this is an absolute mad period for all of us. When you work in sport, but particularly football at Christmas time, it is utterly non-stop. So, I mean, I can happily jump into what I'm doing at the moment, but Laura, how are things at TNT right now? Spill the beans.
Well, normally I've always had a really busy Christmas working in football. I've actually got a wee bit lucky this year because TNT don't have a Boxing Day game. So it's a little bit quieter. So yeah, Amazon have picked up the Boxing Day game, which is very nice of Amazon to do that because it means that TNT's last game is the week before Christmas and the week after Christmas. So I actually get a wee bit of time off in between to go home. But normally, working in club football, as Finn probably alludes to right now, it is utter chaos. And you're lucky if you even get Christmas Day off because the players don't. So when the media team are lucky enough to do it, then you grab that with both hands.
Yeah, it's pretty chaotic. Thankfully, we do get Christmas Day off. All of this build-up goes to the Melbourne Derby is always the Saturday closest to Christmas, which happens to be the 23rd this year, so quite late.
Oh, wow.
Which is by far Melbourne City's biggest game of the season because not just in terms of on the pitch, but off the pitch as well, where the average gate, I would say, at most Melbourne City games is about 3,000 probably. For the Derby, it will be closer to 10 times that. So in terms of the revenue that generates and everything else. But obviously on the pitch, it's a massive game because it's a Derby. So I get a couple of days off either side of the game sandwiched in between. I think it's the 28th of December. But yeah, so the first time I've had to work Christmas is at a football club. But yeah, it's busy. It's non-stop. Non-stop.
This is what you get on the Scottish Football Show. You get someone who's working on the English Premier League, but they don't have the game on Boxing Day, and you have Australian football knowledge. Welcome to... And I'm also working on the English Premier League. So this is why you should listen to the show, Laura. This is why the listeners enjoy it, I hope, is because even though we're doing all of that, we will always take the time out of our day to talk about the thing that we love the most. That is Scottish football.
That's the thing. I get a time off now to go home and I get to go to the Scottish games. And that's the difference.
To be fair, there was an amazing shot of you. I don't know where it was, but it was definitely a Champions League game. And I think you were wearing headphones. And and your good pal Grant definitely put on Instagram saying she is 100% listening to Sports Sound right now. I think it was a Prem game, 3 o'clock kickoff or whatever.
No, I was at Real Madrid versus Bragg in the Champions League, and I was listening to St Mirren versus Hibs on the
amazing
radio.
God bless you, Laura, the bastion of Scottish football. Right, well, let's continue the laughs. We should really start only in one place, considering it's a festive podcast. Why on earth was Santa being booed?
It's
a good question.
We can start.
I'm going to just open up my Tunnocks caramel wafer. If you enjoy Tunnocks caramel wafers, I'm eating one right now. and we are not sponsored by them
yet.
But we should be.
Yeah, Santa getting booed off the pitch at Celtic Park is one of the best Scottish football stories in recent weeks. I love this so much. So yeah, Celtic were obviously 2-0 down to Hearts at half time in the league at the weekend, and the Celtic fans were having absolutely none of anything that was going on around the stadium. So when Santa comes out at half time to do, I assume the draw, the prize draw, just met by a rendition of boos around the ground. And then you get these photos of him afterwards. Did you see after he's walking off, pulls
Oh.
his hair off, he's got his wig pulled off, he's walking off just completely dejected by the reaction he got. He was just, that poor man was in the wrong place at the wrong time.
Aye, but he's no the real Santa.
He's just
What?
representing
Why is he
Santa.
feeling?
No,
What?
he's
He's no the real. He's
just representing Santa while he's away doing his job.
He's no Santa's
Well, that's
helper. So why is
okay
he getting so upset
then.
about it?
Yeah. Because we all take our jobs very seriously, Andrew, okay? And this is important to him.
I just like
He's only got one job.
for those of you that
Sorry
haven't
to sound
actually
so
heard
Roy
this,
Keane about it.
I was, because obviously I read about it, or, on Twitter or whatever, blah, 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 Santa getting booed. And, you kind of chuckle and you're just like, oh, I'm sure it was just like, the old person here or there. Somebody sent me the video and it's like the whole ground is booed now. He gets announced over the speaker system. And yeah, and then he just gets this massive boo. I felt so sorry for the guy. Oh, man, that's just devastating.
One thing I really enjoyed trawling through social media was did you see the Frankfurt fans that weren't allowed into Pittodrie for the Europa Conference League game with Aberdeen, but they still travelled and they headed up into like the top of a hill and were singing the whole game. Did you see
I mean,
this?
that
It
was
was
in
so
fair
cool,
play to
wasn't it?
them.
So cool.
Incredible. They must have been absolutely Baltic because Aberdeen is not the warmest place in December to start with. But then you stand on top of a hill completely exposed. That is going to be
That
one
hill is right
chilly
next to the North Sea as well. It is the only thing
night.
splitting Pittodrie and the North Sea is that hill. So fair
Yeah.
play to them.
Pretty cool, though. I really like
I
that.
quite liked as well. I don't know if you saw. They were checking that none of the Frankfurt fans were going in through the Aberdeen turnstiles at the game, and the security was it was incredibly scientific. Their strategy was basically going up to people and saying, "How are you doing?"
In
Presumably they
German.
were going up. Well, presumably they were going up saying "Fitz like" and seeing if they got a proper answer or a bemused one. But apparently in the queue, there was one guy in a very thick Doric accent. That just said, ah, gut danke. So yeah, just to play up
Very good.
to that bit of banter. But yeah, a fair play to the fans, man. It's such a shame they didn't get allowed in because they're a brilliant support,
Do we
a
remember
great travelling
why they
support as
couldn't
well.
get in? Was it
Some sort
not
of UEFA
crowd trouble?
sanctions that were around it, obviously. They've probably, I don't know, kicked off a match 8 seconds too late and got a stadium closure or something, knowing UEFA. But yeah, it'll be something to do with that.
What else have you got for me, Laura?
Did you see the Willie Collum was bootless? Well, one bootless for his European match that he was doing during the week. I don't know what game it was he was refereeing, but I just saw the clip of him carrying his boot in his hand as he was running along the pitch, which kind of just feels like a really good metaphor for Willie Collum in general.
Footless, footless.
Was well, what it's not just that his shoe came off, it's like his shoe had come off and he was trying to catch up back to the action, so he's picked up his boot and he's sprinting back across the field with one shoe on and one in his hand trying to get up. Yeah, a truer metaphor for a Scottish referee I don't think's ever been there.
Okay, so after Laura's big old rant about Motherwell and how poorly run they are last week, Laura,
Slightly harsh, but okay.
can you tell me what's just happened at the well?
Yeah, so there was news broke that Chairman Jim McMahon and interim part-time CEO Derek Weir is going to step down from Motherwell next year. So Chairman and CEO are clearing out. It comes after a Will
Leading out.
Society board comes after a Will Society board meeting, where the pair have decided it's time for a new direction at Far Park. So Jim McMahon is going to stay until the end of the season, I think. Derek Weir until I think it's the end of March. So yeah, a few more months, and then there's things that are going to be changing. Looks like they're going to have to obviously look for, well, new chairman, new CEO. Yeah, things are changing at Far Park.
Yeah, in your opinion, do you think that this could instigate something positive for the club, or do you think it's something that even puts them further into turmoil?
No, I think going off like what I was kind of explaining last week in terms of just how it's run just now, this, as I was kind of alluding to in last week's episode, the CEO's only in 3 times a week. There needs to be more done at a higher level. It's not just let's just blame the manager and the players for the bad results. I think this is a good thing that's happening. Look, Jim McMahon leaves and will be very well remembered once he's left Fir Park. He was a big part to play in terms of the club becoming fan owned, and has done a lot of good things for the club. But I think it's right that they can look for a new approach and a new direction going forward. So it looks like
But
the Well Society.
that approach and new direction seems like it's not there right now. It feels like this is the start of it, and it's like,
That
well,
is
surely you want
exactly
that
that.
before all of this happens.
Well,
That's
that's
the
the
fear,
thing.
right?
Like we're talking about it. Like crowds aren't on the rise. Player trading hasn't really progressed. We don't see as much of the community work that's done, which I know is done. It's just not shouted about as much now. It feels that the things that Motherwell used to stand out for aren't really there for people to see anymore. So they're right now, it doesn't feel there's a plan to take this club forward. And really give them that strong foundation of the future.
Wow.
But I feel like this change could give them that. That you've got the Well Society board now, who are the majority shareholders, the fans who own the club. There's 9 people in the board there. And they will work with the people left on the board as well to find people that are going to move us in the right direction going forward. And I think what's good about that is that the Well Society are quite young and forward thinking. They're not your stuffy board in terms of all your middle aged to old elderly white men that have all kind of got the same mentality in football, which you do find quite often across the board in football, especially in Scottish football. I think going to the fans to get decisions moving forward could open up new ideas, fresh ideas, and bring something different to the board moving forward.
I presume both of you are against B teams. And have you seen that the Lower League have voted to keep B teams into, well, in their division for at least the next 2 seasons? It's going to be Celtic and Hearts B teams that continue. 15 teams voted. Six of them came out to publicly say they didn't want it. So it was kind of almost a split vote. Vote was 8-4 and 7 against, and one club didn't vote. Who was the club that didn't vote?
It's not been confirmed. There's one club that's being
Who do
spoken
you
about on
think
social
it
media,
is?
but we cannot say because we do not know. It's
Come on.
allegedly Gretna, but I have no facts to back that up.
Ratna!
That's just hearsay on social media. I am not saying that
Unbelievable.
factually.
Wow, Matt, the power that Gretna must have, that's tremendous. But
It's
you know,
it's an it's it is an interesting one, because I think I find it really interesting that the vote was so close, and it's literally pretty much a 50-50 split. So there are obviously some very strong feelings either way. I think the clubs that very strongly feel that B teams or academy teams shouldn't be part of the league system have been very vocal about it, and they're well within their rights to do that. I think some of the clubs that maybe feel, maybe in their own interest, it's better to have B teams in the league,
yeah.
maybe because of the money or the exposure or whatever. But they don't feel brave enough to kind of stand out and be like, actually, we think it's a positive thing for the game. So I don't know. All you can do is be democratic about it and get the clubs to vote. They voted this way, so you kind of have to go with it. At a personal level, I'm kind of disappointed by it, because I think the B team experiment in the lower leagues been Not a great one, not a hugely positive one. He had something. Was it 33-year-old James McCarthy was playing for the Celtic B team? You're like, what's the point? What's the point?
Yeah.
And it just kind of it cheapens the league a little bit. And as we've seen with the teams coming up from the Lowland League and Highland League into the league system, there are brilliant teams there who are oven ready, if you want to use the Brexit
Oh
metaphor,
my
for coming
goodness.
into the league system and surviving and doing really well. You know, we've seen Kelty Hearts and the Spartans and teams like that coming up. So I on a personal level, I was a bit gutted, but you have to let these clubs govern themselves.
Absolutely. Some positive news, or maybe negative if you're a Forfar fan, that there's some international superstars down in the lower leagues of Scottish football, because Forfar's Roberto Ndidi, hope I'm saying that right, he's going to miss the start of the new year because he's off to Kenya to represent Tanzania in the African Cup of Nations. Tournament starts on the 13th of January. I always loved the African Cup of Nations, and I will pay particular attention to Roberto going forward. That's exciting. But there was some kind of not great news at the weekend, not in Scottish football, but elsewhere, and it's kind of stokes a few fires as to what has happened in Scotland in the past. So we're going to hear about that now.
Big men are up from the back. El Mahoney, right foot. Whips it. Oh, jeez, he peeps, man.
This next segment is kind of born out of something that's not really a Scottish football story, but something that's quite close to the game up here. Down in England, we saw Luton Town defender Tom Lockyer, who suffered a heart attack on the pitch at the weekend with the game being abandoned. It was the second time that this has actually happened to Tom after a similar incident in the playoffs at the end of the season, last season that is. So we wanted to look into what's really being done in our game to help, or the overall game, to help spot and prevent these issues. So I'm really pleased to say we're actually joined by a genuine doctor, which is great. Hearts club doctor, that is, Dr. Michael Campbell. Thanks so much for giving us your time, Michael. It's really good to kind of get to the way, get to the heart of it, of matters. Sorry for the old pun. That's terrible, isn't it? We've even got that. It's the fact that it's the Hearts club doctor as well. I'll stop the jokes now, because this is no laughing matter. But tell me, what's being done in our game to help spot and prevent these sorts of things at the moment? Because this is kind of important now. We look back at 16 years ago when we saw, you know, legend that is Phil O'Donnell, who passed away on the pitch as well.
Yes, I think that's why it's always going to be very close to the Scottish game after that incident, which everyone remembers, and that certainly led to a kind of intensification of, you know, things were already in motion, but certainly in the last 15 years, it'll be, you know, things have moved on a lot in terms of what we do. You know, thankfully these things are rare. So it's roughly kind of 1 in 40 to 1 in 80,000, depending on what gets quoted, as to how often, you know, there's a sudden cardiac death. And thankfully, some of these incidents don't end in deaths, and that's thankfully quite a lot of them don't end in deaths, and that's becoming more and more the case thanks to what does happen. In terms of Scottish football, I can certainly speak for what we do at Hearts. So what we do is a kind of baseline screening with all of our full-time professional players, where you'll take a history where you check for cardiac symptoms such as kind of chest pain, lightheadedness, palpitations, so feeling like your heart's racing, and shortness of breath. Another very important thing would be family history, which can give quite a can be quite a predictor of cardiac risk. Each player in Scottish football, in the Scottish Professional League, so the Scottish Premiership down to League Two, through their career, they'll have one SFA-funded cardiac screen. So that's an ECG, an echocardiogram, which are two different tests, one looking at the electrical activity of the heart, and having a look at kind of cardiac rhythm with a player, as it happens to be at rest. And then the echocardiogram, which is the kind of cold jelly scan through the chest wall, looking at the structure and the flow of blood through the heart in real time. And when you put these two together, you get a nice picture of the kind of wiring and structure of the heart. And that can pick up things like hypertrophic cardiomyopathy, which is often cited as the cause of many of these cardiac arrest episodes. So that's a wee bit of the background of what we do. Now we pick up, we certainly do pick things up from that, and all of these things, I should add, are all kind of, they're not looked at by people like myself. I'm not a cardiologist, never mind a cardiologist who specialises in sport and young athletes. So they all go to a cardiologist who's attached through with the SFA, and I think has been for many years, who looks at all of the results coming through and uses this kind of wealth of experience to be able to pick things up. And often with the clubs, like I say, it happens with all the professional clubs. It's once in their at least once in their career, but as you move up, certainly it's something that, for UEFA clubs going to compete in UEFA competition, it's a case of you get an ECG every year. So that's the one with the 12 leads across your chest. And then the echo, which is the one that looks at the structure and the flow, you get that every 2 years at clubs competing in European competition.
What's the procedure then, Michael, if you do spot an irregularity? Because I think this happened with Conor Goldson, didn't it? Something quite innocent was spotted. Something was spotted in quite an innocent test, and then he got it solved quite straightforwardly. What happened?
And he was
then
24,
like
Laura. He was 24 as well, I think, which is obviously a long time after these sort of things would be being checked. So it's quite a later. These things can change, Michael.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And that is one thing of being a footballer at a higher level, you will tend to get these things checked on an annual basis. So every club I've worked for, which includes a club in the Scottish Championship and two different clubs up in the Scottish Premiership, have done an ECG with all of their first team players every year, and the echo scan every 2 years. So the more information they get, and over time, certainly normal results over that time gives you, further reassurance than just a one-off normal, although that is the biggest reassurance in the first instance. In terms of abnormalities getting picked up, they do. Athletes' hearts are different than people who are less athletic. They're putting their heart through more strain. Their heart muscles tend to be a bit bigger. It's not unusual for things to be picked up. Not unusual. It's uncommon. However, it's there. It happens. And I'd imagine there's a collection of players each year that have to go through, potentially more stringent tests, or they might need to have a face-to-face with a sports cardiologist, for example. Some of the further tests can be like a cardiac MRI, which looks at the heart in a different way again. Sometimes it can be a exercise stress test where they'll have the heart monitored as they are working up through exercise and as they increase their heart rate over a certain level.
I just wanted to pick up on something that you mentioned there, Michael, about the fact that football players or elite athletes they do have bigger muscles. They do put their body under such immense strain. And at the elite end of the game, I think, the incidents that always come to mind with this, specifically, I think for us as Scottish football fans, Phil O'Donnell is the most shocking. But these are not uncommon sights, tragically. We can all remember like Fabrice Muamba, Christian Eriksen at the Euros. Mm-hmm. These things happen. Rarely, given the amount of football that's played around the world, but they're still shocking when they do happen. In your professional opinion, do you think the demands on players, maybe in general, but certainly towards the elite end of the game, are too much? Like, are human bodies designed for this amount of physical strain?
I mean, certainly, I think there's, you know, that's obviously been discussed a lot in regards to kind of musculoskeletal injuries and particularly kind of muscle injuries and how often they're happening. I know it's a big feature again down south this year, where the, you know, the games are extended further with the, you know, the kind of more attention to time wasting, etc. And you know, I know the clubs there are not necessarily happy about it. In terms of, you know, cardiac strain and cardiac risk with that, from what I've not seen anything that I've not read anything that's kind of looked into that in detail. And thankfully, you know, in some ways, because these things are so rare, you know, it's harder to get, you know, that accurate detail from that. You know, where you know, you can do huge analysis of hamstring injuries, because, you know, there's six a squad all the time, you know, versus versus, you know, these, which are thankfully very rare incidents. I mean, certainly these episodes that you highlighted, I think Mark Vivian Foe was one who unfortunately died on the pitch. And I think since then there's been this kind of sea change in you know, structure and organisation and knowledge and just kind of professionalism around football in terms of how these things are approached. And thankfully with that, you know, there's a marked change in kind of positive outcome with these things. You know, as much as it's you know, these sort of incidents always bring it to everyone's attention, and they're always shocking and upsetting for those involved, be them teammates or even, you know, I'm sure on Saturday's case, you know, the fans watching on. But thankfully, most of these cases of sudden cardiac arrest, you know, can be promptly treated with, you know, with getting shocks, with getting shocked by a defibrillator, and that is, you know, that I would say, despite all this screening that we do, where, you know, we do pick up some things that put you at higher risk, these things can still happen. So that's where, you know, staff training at football clubs is probably the biggest factor in how we change how outcomes are with this. I can speak again for Hearts. You know, we ensure that every training session that happens, certainly for our first team and B team, which are our two kind of full professional teams, you know, there is a clinician, either a physiotherapist or a doctor, at each training session, you know, before a ball's kicked, until the end, until the last player leaves the pitch. And I think what is common to just about every club in the league, they'll have, you know, all of the equipment there on site, ready to go, in terms of the defibrillator and other kind of emergency life-saving equipment. And there really is, you know, more so than if it happened to somebody on Sucky Hall Street, you know, athletes are more likely to survive, because the type of cardiac arrest they have is more likely to be one that is, you know, rescued, is helped by a defibrillator.
Rangers win the League Cup! James Tavernier's the hero, as he so often is in the blue and white!
Well, folks, what a week it has been for Rangers. Title race is alive and kicking. They've made the last 16 of Europa League, and of course, they've lifted the first silverware of the season. Wow, Finn. Give it, like, what, 3 months, 2 months ago, Michael Beale, the Blagger Beale, is off. and Philip Clement has come in, changed everything. But has he changed? Like, how much has he changed? Is it just a professional mindset, or is it just kind of, you know, making training fun again? He seems like, obviously, people will allude to the fact that Celtic have just lost two league matches in a row, which changes the whole dynamic of the league situation. But there is a real dynamic shift within the Rangers kind of camp right now.
I think the difference that Clement's made has been night and day from
Excellent. Let's move on.
Beal. I think under Beal, Rangers looked at, this was around about September time, they looked disparate, confused, a bit directionless. There was no real strategy on the pitch. Clement's come in and very quickly, I think, streamlined the message to the players. He's gotten players to do very specific roles, which they've alluded to. So I think John Lundstrom looks like a player that knows what he's doing now, where he didn't before. Tavernier, even, I think, is better now in the last 9 weeks or so that Clement's been in than he was towards the start of the season. I think he's made some quite big changes. So one of the big ones is he's, when he came in, and I think he was shocked by this, it shouldn't really happen at a big club. There was basically just one training schedule for the entire squad. There were no personalised programmes. And I don't know if that's been part of the reason why there's been so many injuries, but there are specialised programmes now. They're detailing things per player, not for the squad. Rangers have also brought in Tom Taylor from Brighton as the head of performance, as well as they're bringing in Nils Koppen from PSV as director of football recruitment in January. I think the most underlying thing was, and just looking to the cup final for a second, or over the past week, Rangers, through their injuries, have had to bring in Dujon Sterling to play defensive midfield. So this is a player whose natural position is right back, can play centre back at a push, but he's never played defensive mid in his life. And he had to do it in Betis for parts of the game. He had to cover for Cifuentes when he got sent off in the league game. And then he played the full game against Aberdeen and he was man of the match. And I think that's the difference to me of what a coach can do and a proper coach, like an elite level manager coach like Clement, and what Beal couldn't do, because those players regressed under him, and players that are, I think, limited sometimes have shown that they can give more under Clement. So Dessers as well, with his goal against Betis, I know that Clement spent time with him on the plane, showing him videos and using that time to be like, this is what you're capable of. I think the videos might have been Messi spinning Boateng in the Champions League, given what Dessers did on the pitch against Betis.
Look, you just do this. Do this.
Or old R9 videos, I think. But yeah, it's. I think those are the tangible differences he's made.
Dujon Sterling really cutting the mustard at Rangers right now. It wasn't a classic final, Laura, though. It's a miserable final. I won't go all Derek Adams on us right now, but it just wasn't a great game, shall we say? And if I was a punter, anyway, Laura, Barry Robson has been under fire regularly throughout the season. Genuinely a performance that you would have expected more out of. She's gone.
Where have I gone?
She's now just a logo. Laura is now just a logo. We should keep this in.
Oh, yeah.
That was amazing. There we go. She's back.
Sorry. I didn't mean that.
She was just doing her hair.
Just a bit of surreptitious promoing of the show in between questions.
Bang. But Barry Robson, Laura, under a lot of fire throughout the season, a poor performance again, when they had just an excellent one, beating Frankfurt in the Europa Conference, comes out with some interesting comments. What do you make of it all?
Yeah, so he said after the game, let me just find the exact quote. "We have no right as Aberdeen to come down here and run the whole game. That's a proper team we're playing against."
What was the question, though? Do we know what the question was? Because that does add a little bit of context to the answer.
Does it add context, though? Because you should be smarter than that to know that that's the line that people are going to pull out. Regardless, people want sound bites. People want just little snippets.
Yeah,
and if you say
yeah.
something that daft, I get what he's trying to say. And I completely understand Rangers were the favourites. They are a bigger side. In general, they are making a journey down to what the SFA essentially made home territory for Rangers, considering everything that happened with the tickets and the home end and all sorts. But you don't come out and say something like that. I'm sorry, but it's quite disrespectful to his own players and his own fan base. If you're going to go with that mindset of, we have no right to run this game, why did you turn up? I'm sorry, it's a cup final. It's 90 minutes. It is, you've got as much right as Rangers to turn up and boss that game. And if that is your mentality after the game, what was your mentality before it?
Well, I have to say, like, I genuinely do not know what the question was. So, I think that's important, because really, if you take it for what it's worth, Aberdeen shouldn't go and boss against Rangers. I don't think they bossed. I don't think they bossed Rangers.
Team.
But I don't. Yeah, but no.
The term "proper team," like, Aberdeen just beat Frankfurt 2-0, the team that just got to the Europa League final two seasons ago, and they bossed them.
And also to keep
three
it in
days
context,
beforehand. Was that a proper team? Was Aberdeen a proper team that night?
To keep it in context as well, Aberdeen have also taken 4 points off Rangers in the league so far this season.
Yeah.
So it's not
including
like
only a couple of weeks ago as well.
Yeah,
for sure. But again, those weren't dominant performances. They were just effective ones.
Did they
so
not win 3-1 at Ibrox?
They won 3-1
again,
at Ibrox.
Again, they didn't dominate that game. The scoreline the scoreline may be dominant, but it doesn't mean your performance level is dominant. Doesn't mean
they
went to Rangers.
If you score three goals at Ibrox, you're going to be quite a proper team.
Let me just pull up the stats then. Hold on. No, because that's important.
Oh, Andrew with his miniskirt.
No, but watching that game, Rangers should have been in the game at Ibrox under Beale. Rangers should have been out of sight, I think, but they just didn't take their chances. So when Aberdeen did get the chance to, then they grew in confidence as the game went on. Then when they had their period of, as always happens in football, there'll always be little pockets, even if you're the smaller team, where you get the chance.
Sorry.
They took their chances and did that.
Rangers at Ibrox, when Aberdeen won 3-1, Rangers had 71% possession. They had 18 shots to Aberdeen's 14. So Aberdeen had 29% possession. They still won 3-1. So the whole idea that, you know, they didn't go to Ibrox and were a proper team. Do you know what I mean? So the fact of the matter is, Rangers should have totally won that game. If anything, Rangers should have won 4-0 in the grand scheme of things with the money that's spent compared to what Aberdeen spent.
I'm not totally out there
to defend Barry Robson's comments, but I kind of go back to the whole idea of what was the question, and someone on Twitter will tell me.
I do understand where he's coming from. I just think that, and he's not the only one this weekend for a manager to come out and just say
for sure,
something
yeah.
that's a wee bit inappropriate and not really think through his words very carefully. Maybe a little bit ill-advised, or he's just a wee bit heated in the moment. I think we've kind of seen that across the weekend. Just take a breath and think about what you're saying, I think, and just word it slightly better.
Rangers have got more to look forward to. Not only will they be playing Celtic with the chance to go top of the league, potentially. But they also have the only Scottish team to look forward to European football after Christmas.
They do, and it's a massive thing, not just to get through the group, because I think that the aim is always to get through the group. I think they've done it the last number of seasons when they've played in the Europa League, so to not do it, especially given the opposition, it's probably not the strongest group they've ever had, would have been a regression. But to get through the group and top it means that they actually skip the round of 32 with Champions League teams dropping in. So I think it might even be as late as March that Rangers entered the competition again. So it's two big matches less to play in February. And just that even then at that stage in the season could be a good thing. To go to Spain and beat Betis, given the injuries that they had to start with and the team that they put out. But in the context of Betis had only conceded 3 goals at home in the league all season, I think they'd been on a 15-game winning run at home only ended the weekend before by Real Madrid, who got a draw. So to go there and score 3 goals and put in the performance that they did was just, it was magnificent. But it was across the board for Scottish clubs. First time in our history as a nation, we've had 3 teams win group stage matches all in the same match day. And that was against, you know, Feyenoord, Eintracht Frankfurt, who were beat Rangers.
Who just smashed Bayern Munich as well. 5-0.
And beat Bayern Munich 5-0 at the weekend. and Real Betis, who are a top La Liga side. So that was so encouraging, not just from a Rangers point of view, but a Scottish football point of view and a coefficient point of view, to notch a couple more points on that as well. It's been a good week.
Been a good... says the happy Rangers fan. It's been a really good week for you, Finn. Let's just wrap up the rest of the SPFL, because it was a 2 weeks in a row that Celtic have lost a league match. It was 2-0 to Hearts. Lauren Shankland and... A smashing free kick from who was it again?
Kingsley.
Kingsley, yeah. What a free kick it was. It was kind of reminiscent to Lee Griffiths against Joe Hart all over again. It was very similar, wasn't it?
That's exactly what it made me think of. I can't believe nobody else picked up on that online. Because yeah. I was like, when I saw him shaping up, it was like the position of the ball, the swerve.
The distance as well.
Yeah, the way that Hart's, it was even the same angle of the pitch, like the same way that the camera's facing down the pitch and everything is Hamden. That sort of put me in mind of, it's a stunning strike because some people have gone off at Hart about, oh, he should be getting over to that. I'd be like, how? It's like the one pocket of the goal in between the post and the keeper's hand that he has to hit at that pace, get it up and over. It's a fantastic goal.
Yeah, it's amazing, really, because also I know Hearts, that was two defeats in a row and then they've won again. But I think if you look at Hearts over the last, couple of weeks, it was four straight, it was four straight wins and then it was two defeats. And then they've just won again. So like the consistency is kind of there again for Hearts under Stephen Naismith. So good times for the Jambos at the moment. Dundee were 1-0 winners away to Ross County, which bore the most interesting and probably stupidest comments I've ever heard for a long time from Derek Adams, who's just came back into Scottish football in his third stint at Ross County. He loses 1-0. And he comes out and says, well, Laura, tell me what he says.
Oh, these are good. Let me read you a little story. he says, the lines in this are incredible. He says, the standard is shocking. It's one of the worst games I've ever seen. I've been back here and see the standard and think, whoa, any chance? If I'm a spectator and watching that today, I'm thinking, is this what Scottish football is about? It needs to up its game. This is the best product in this division. It has to be a lot better. I've left a team in League Two that's miles better than this team. Miles. And that's saying something. We had the bottom team budget in League Two in England and we're 100 times better than this. 100 times.
I mean, listen, I directed Gillingham against Bradford on Saturday. Let me tell you right now, that was one of the worst, even though there was two goals in that game, that was one of the worst games I have ever seen. And I have watched many football matches in my time. And, you know, it's just absolutely bonkers. Like, I don't know where he's coming from. I genuinely think he's on thin ice. I don't think someone like that
I don't think a team like Ross County would take that seriously and say you're damning our game, you're damning our reputation, because that is exactly what he's doing. Now, look, again, it's a manager that's saying something from the heart. He's very emotional after a very late defeat, and he's not thought through his words. I can kind of see what he's trying to say, and that is something you say behind the scenes. You say it to your coaches if you're not happy about the standard. You say it to your internal team at the club, and how do we market our game? How do we market our club better when we've got these defeats happening when they shouldn't be? Like, I get all that. These are conversations that clubs will have deep down, well behind the scenes, away from the microphones. But to come out and say that after a last minute defeat, for your players to hear that and your fans to hear that at a time like this, when fans are going out and spending their hard earned money and sitting in the cold in Dingwall watching games, you need to motivate these people. And to come out and say, nah, the game's shit.
Well, it's the whole point of, like, you know, there's honesty and there's stupidity, and mm-hmm. you can't string them to them both side by side the whole way through. You know, you can say it was a poor game, but to say it's the worst game he's ever seen, I mean, he's managed Ross County in the lower levels, right? You know, he's definitely seen worst football games, so he's at it. So then you have to really break down into what are his motives. He's came back. He knows how strict he has to work with. You know, he knows what he's coming back to. So to turn around and basically say his players aren't working hard enough, B, are they even good enough? Because he's certainly saying they wouldn't. None of them would get in his Morecambe side. Well, why didn't he stay at Morecambe?
I think it's interesting that I think to be heard maybe in the lower leagues in England, or in football at all, maybe in the UK, you have to be incredibly hyperbolic. You have to exaggerate things to a point where they're almost ridiculous for you to be heard in what you're saying. And looking at that, it's like, there's a way of saying, like, I've actually been surprised at how poor the standard's been since I've got back here. I thought Scottish football was better than this, as opposed to being, my team was miles better than this. Emphasis on miles. My team had the worst budget in the league and we were 100 times better than this. 100 times. It's all just very talk sport. And yeah, I'm just like, there's a way of making your point without coming across as being silly when you're trying to make it, but maybe that's the way he feels that he's heard. There was a really interesting tweet, I'll just finish on this, Rory Loy, who does quite a lot of stuff with sports science stuff now, put out, where he'd said something along the lines of Derek Adams being in England and is kind of brainwashed by the opinion that bang average League One and League Two players who can't control the ball, saying Scottish football is poor. He played in League One for a team that finished eighth, and he said that while they're good athletes, they are very limited ability. And then he ends with the great line, which makes total sense this week. No clubs in League One and League Two in England would be beating clubs like Frankfurt, Feyenoord and Betis. That's for sure. So I think it kind of underlines the point. Look, we know our game's not the best in the world, but is Ross County versus Dundee the worst game of football he's ever seen? I doubt it.
To be fair, Rory Loy's played against me, so he's certainly seen ballers.
You know shite. You know shite when he sees it.
Elsewhere, Livingston got probably a decent point for them at home against Kilmarnock. St Johnston got a good win against Hibs because Hibs have been doing really well recently. The Craig Levine hype train continues. And St Mirren, another 0-0 draw in Motherwell. So what's that? That is four goals in the Scottish Premiership. Top flight. Pay your money, guys.
The thing is, though,
that was a last minute winner at Dingwall. So
there was also
drama. That's what it's all about.
There was also Liam Kelly saved a penalty again for Motherwell in the St Mirren game.
So,
although they're 0-0 games, I think.
And Livy hit a penalty off the post as well. So there's drama.
Exactly.
Everywhere.
There is drama, and it's to say that a 0-0 game is boring just on the face of it, I think is maybe doing it a bit of a disservice, because you can get great 0-0 games that are really involved and everything. So I don't think it was without drama, but yeah, I get your point. One goal across the other.
Like I said, I did Gillingham Bradford at the weekend and that was 2-0 and that was pretty dull. Going down to the lower leagues, Finn, do you want to rattle through what's been happening down there?
Yeah, well, I guess the best place to start is in the top of the Championship, because it was a top of the table clash between Raith and Dundee United with Rovers going up there. It was a brilliant game. So Raith take it 1-0. But actually, the bit that I saw from the highlights online, I was just like, that is unbelievable. Right at the death, Dundee United on the break, searching for the equaliser. Name escapes me, I can't remember. The Raith central defender comes in with, I think, one of the best tackles I've seen all season. Flying at speed. Takes the man, but fairly. Totally takes the ball first. Like, there's no question that it's a good tackle. Absolutely cleans the boy out, takes the ball and everything. And it's a match-saving tackle. Like, that keeps the 3 points, I'm sure, for Raith Rovers. And they've gone from strength to strength this season. I would say a surprise package to me this season in the Championship, especially given the strength of Dundee United. And we've talked about how strong Dundee United are. But it's making it so interesting at the top there. Just going quickly down the leagues as well. League One, Cove lost their first game in 11. They've been on a pretty good run. Opened the scoring against Alloa, but a late Scott Target goal kind of secured away side's comeback. They're still sitting third in the table, though. More misery for Clyde, a team that we focused on with that big chat a couple of weeks ago, losing again, this time 2-1 at Peterhead towards the right end of the table. Steny still doing Steny things, winning their seventh game on the bounce. They beat East 5-2-1. They stay top of the table. They're 5 points clear of Peterhead. So, yeah, I'd said it last week. I love this part of the season because there's so much football going on and you're really starting to see the runners and riders at both ends of the table. Just absolutely love it.
I can't,
inject it into my veins.
I cannot believe you didn't pick up on Queen of the South's 3-1 victory over Edinburgh City, by the way, which is their 14th win against Edinburgh City. Every match has been a win. So 14 matches against Edinburgh City, 14 wins. And might I add, it's about 17 goals in the last four Queen of the South matches, which makes them the most entertaining team in League One. So there you go. I don't have stats that say any other team has got many goals in there, so I'm just going to say we're the best to watch. And we are currently 7th in the table. Come on, Queens. What can I say? But that is it. That is us for another week. Thank you so much for listening. Thanks so much for Hearts Club Doctor Michael Campbell joining us on the podcast this week. And thanks to you, Laura and Finn. Superb, as always. What are you doing for Christmas this year, Laura?
I'm going home and I'm going to...
Nobody cares. Finn, what are you doing? Sorry. No, what are you doing? Working. Sorry, I cut you off.
You do.
I'm going to go home and I'm going to go to a couple of games.
Oh, superb. A couple of games. Yeah. Football matches, I presume. Finn?
I'm jealous. I'll be working at football matches and interspersing that with trips to the beach.
Oh all right. Jesus. Come on. Rubbing in our faces. Well, if you're still listening to or thinking about Finn in trunks right now, you really need to... Thanks so much for listening. Go and listen to something else now. Go away. Bye.